Good morning and welcome to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, and you're going to join me for one of the fastest based half hours of radio that you can possibly imagine. And with me today is my special guest and partner, John Frieden. Welcome, John.
Morning, Wayne.
Welcome to the show. And the show is brought to you by Odin, Feldman & Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia, but serving the entire Washington, D.C. metro area with clients all across the country. If you'd like to know more about OF&P, visit us on the web at www.ofplaw.com. Or if you'd like to make an appointment with one of our 55 attorneys, call us at 703-218-2100. Today, we're going to be talking with John about social networking. But first, let me give you a little background on John, because he's new to the show and he's going to be a recurring guest and sometime host of the show. John is a principal in the firm's litigation practice group, where he tries and argues appeals in a variety of complex commercial disputes and criminal matters. And his real expertise that we're counting on to beef up the content of the show is that he counsels e-commerce businesses in a variety of industries and recently led a team of attorneys in representing one business in its acquisition by a publicly traded company. And I want you to visit John's blog at www.ecommercelaw.typepad.com, which is regularly updated with all kinds of content.
That's what we try to do.
Absolutely. So today, John, let's talk about social networking. From a legal perspective, why is social networking so important?
Well, Wayne, when you think about social networking, what you're talking about there is the most popular activity by internet users.
Right.
You know, we think of using the internet in terms of using email, but when you get down to looking at statistics, they tell us that people spend more time on social networking sites than they do even sending and responding to or sending and receiving emails.
Or talking to each other face to face.
Much more time than talking to each other face to face. So, you know, in America, there's 240 million users of the internet. 35 to 46%, depending on where you get your statistics,
right,
of internet users regularly visit social networking, social media websites.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important from a legal perspective, because wherever you have that large a group amassing of people, you're going to have legal problems.
So many of the users of social networking don't properly use the site's privacy settings. So their posts are available to any of 240 million Americans?
Absolutely, Wayne. You know, Facebook is the prime example here,
yeah,
because I think it's the one that we're most familiar with.
Yeah, my kids are on Facebook. I'm watching them constantly.
And you should be, Wayne. And that's, you know, I'm a parent myself, and although my children are too young to use Facebook, when they are old enough, when they use Facebook or whatever comes next, I'll make sure that I monitor their activity as well.
Sure.
Because the problem with this new paradigm in terms of the social networking sites, the reason that the good news about social networking sites is that anything you post can be read by a lot of people at once.
Right.
The bad thing about social networking sites is that anything you post can be read by a lot of people at once. And in situations where you have sometimes poorly explained privacy settings for a site, people can unintentionally make available to all 240 million Americans using the internet a lot of information about their lives that they wouldn't necessarily want known. For instance, with Facebook, and what I advise clients and parents and my friends is be very careful with your privacy settings, particularly when you're talking prospectively about a vacation you're taking. Because
what do you mean by that?
Well, to the extent that, and you know, I'm on Facebook,
right?
As many of my friends are, many of my clients. And you often see people post about a vacation they're very excited about. You know, next week on Monday, I'll be leaving for the Caribbean.
Oops.
And it can be an oops. And if you're not careful about your privacy settings, what you've just announced to 240 million people is that you won't be at your home for a week. And this is very different than the times I can remember my parents when we went on vacation, the few times we did.
Sure.
You know, having somebody come and pick up the mail and the newspaper so no one would know that you weren't at home while you were gone.
Leave the lights on, a timer.
And exactly.
Exactly. So this is like announcing to the world that I'm leaving my house vacant. Please come and rob me.
Exactly. There's no one will be home for a week. Please come get whatever you'd like.
Wow. So private postings aren't private. What do you mean by that?
Well, even if you're using the privacy settings the way that they're intended,
okay,
the fact is that you really don't, at least according to the courts have looked at this issue, you really don't have a legitimate expectation of privacy in what you put on these sites.
Is that right? So if Facebook offers the ability to limit the access to your site, and somebody hacks into it, or somebody is able to discover it, or somebody republishes that, then it's not necessarily private?
The way that it comes up most, Wayne, is in the context of a discovery dispute with regard to social networking postings that the other side thinks are going to be relevant to your case.
And, so in a litigation context.
It comes up in a lot in terms of a litigation context, but a recent New York decision from a trial court came up with the idea that there's really no legitimate expectation of privacy. And the reason is that even with the privacy settings set to restrict access to your content at the highest levels, there's no guarantee provided by these sites that someone else can't get your information. In fact, these sites are very careful in their terms of use to say that anything that you put on the site may be available to anybody that has access to the site.
Okay.
And what that court and other courts have held is that because of that imperfect privacy, you don't have a legitimate expectation that no one else will be able to read your material.
What was the context of one of these cases? What were the facts behind it?
Well, I can tell you a little bit about the case from New York. And it was a situation where it came up in the litigation context. And it was a New York trial judge who ordered the defendant in the case to grant the plaintiff access to defendant's social networking accounts. Now, it comes up in this procedural posture, Wayne, quite a bit, because due to certain federal statutes, social networking sites doesn't have to or can't provide access to your content to a third party without your permission.
Okay.
And so when two parties end up in litigation and one party believes that social networking posts would be relevant to the litigation, they go into court and they have the court order the other party to sign a release of that information. And that's what happened in this case. It's the Romano versus Steele case. It was just decided last year in New York.
Okay.
So the court ordered the defendant to provide access to the plaintiff over these social networking accounts, including deleted materials from those accounts. So things you might have posted on there that were up there for 30 minutes or 45 minutes that you decided maybe were a bad idea and took off.
Really?
All those materials were included.
Holy moly.
And that was it was a personal injury action against the defendant. And that is the context we see a lot of this in now.
Okay.
And the defendant had claimed that she was harmed in the sense that she was personally injured and that she lost the ability to do certain things in her normal everyday life as a result of those injuries. And so obviously her social networking, the plaintiff believed that her social networking posts, including the pictures there, would show that she wasn't as hurt as she claimed to be.
Mm-hmm.
So there was an order granted that provided access to the plaintiff's current and historical Facebook and MySpace pages and related information on the grounds that because the plaintiff placed that information on those social networking sites, which may have been inconsistent with the claims about the injuries, they were relevant to the case.
I see.
And the court in that decision that was rendered said that in situations like that, where a plaintiff places his or her physical condition in controversy, by making a claim for personal injuries, for instance, can't shield from disclosure material which is necessary to defend the action. And one of those pieces of information would be that the claimed damages never occurred, that the claimed physical problems didn't exist. And the court went through essentially a privacy analysis, Wayne, ultimately concluded that because neither Facebook nor MySpace could guarantee complete privacy, that the plaintiff had no legitimate, reasonable expectation of privacy. So you have to understand what a low standard that would be, I guess, or a high standard, depending on how you look at it.
Right.
The court looked at it and said, because these websites cannot or choose not to guarantee privacy, that your individual use of those sites is not governed by any reasonable, legitimate interest or legitimate privacy.
Meaning the bottom line is don't put stuff that might have any impact on you personally up on these websites,
absolutely
up on these
not.
Social networking sites.
Even if you have your privacy settings set properly.
It can cause problems for you at home, at work, in court. Give me an example of how it might cause problems for you at home. There was an Illinois situation that you mentioned to me.
Just last week, a woman in Illinois sued her cousin, Wayne, for defamation over posts that he made over Facebook. She's seeking $50,000 in damages. I think the suit was filed in Cook County, Illinois.
Okay.
And she alleges that he falsely accused her of taking, quote, cheap shots at people, of having a torrid sexual history, and fixing papers for illegals was how he described it.
Oh,
so
my
she
goodness.
Sued him for defamation, and that's a family member.
How about at work? Give me an example there. I know you mentioned something to me about that.
Well, in the last couple of weeks, there was also the announcement that there had been a case settled before the National Labor Relations Board,
okay,
where an employer had fired a woman who was disparaging her supervisor on Facebook. Now, the settlement...
How stupid is that employee? doesn't she expect that, you know, people, that the employers are going to be checking out their employees' postings?
Well, I'm fascinated by this psychologically, Wayne, and I view it akin to what people do in their cars at stoplights, where they treat like their cars as if they're not encased in glass and people can't see what they're up to. but they treat Facebook the same way, that they do these things on Facebook. And they, for whatever reason, they don't think about the consequences of what they're saying and who might see it.
Mm-hmm. Is a social networking site liable for what you post on the site that might cause damage to somebody else?
The social networking site itself is not liable. Back in 1996, the Communications Decency Act was passed, and mm-hmm. large portions of that statute were held to be unconstitutional. But one part that survived a constitutional challenge was Section 230. And
uh-huh.
what it essentially provides is it's a safe harbor for the operators of websites like social networking sites.
So it's not just social networking. It could be any internet host or any of the search engine sites like, I won't name the names, but any of those big companies that offer that service.
Or any, you know, forums about any topics that people, you know, hobbyists talk about on these forums.
So blogs?
Sites. Blogs in the same way.
Okay.
And you and I have talked about that
sure.
in the past, that as long as the content that appears on the site was created by a third party, which means it wasn't the operator's content,
mm-hmm.
then the operator is immune from liability for any content that offends someone or defames someone.
John, if people want to get in touch with you to find out more information about social networking or any other internet legal issues, how do they get in touch with you?
Well, the two best ways to find me are obviously my blog, and I think you mentioned that earlier. It's www.ecommercelaw.typepad.com. Or you can reach me on my telephone at 703-218-2125.
Thanks for coming on as a special host of Blueprint for Wealth, and we'll have you back for many more topics.
Thanks a lot, Wayne. It was great fun.